Hi, welcome to Outthink. I'm Lawrence Akers, clinical hypnotherapist, member of the LGBTQI community, and today I'm talking to Dean Beck. Now, if I was to sit there and to read Dean's entire bio, I think it would take pretty much the entire length of this show. But we can say that he's a producer, broadcaster, community advocate, Enough ambassador, has been working with Joy for his hide and seek show now for so many years. Very well known figure out there in the Melbourne scene. Thank you for joining us today, Dean.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
And today we want to talk about mental health, sexual health, HIV and drugs, which would normally be seen as four very different topics. But I guess today we're trying to bring a link as to how they're all interconnected.
Well, in so many ways, are they interconnected? I mean, where do we begin? Let's start with just being gay. And
yep.
That in itself means that statistically we're more prone to alcoholism, smoking, drugs, etc. We also like to party. And
yep.
That's probably also part of that too, you know, getting all of that drama away out of our lives for 2 or 3 hours or 8 hours or whatever it is. So culturally, we really have this evolution of, I guess, going against the stigma and criticisms of the heteronormative world and parting our way through it.
Yep.
And so we've created a culture where we celebrate those euphoric moments. And I remember going to Red Roar and Winter Days in the 90s, and you know, drugs were very different back then.
Yeah.
But it was just the most amazing 15,000 person love fest, you know. And everyone was smiling and happy.
Yeah.
And that was at a time when we were smiling and happy and partying because of, you know, the flip side was we had HIV and AIDS killing our population, and we were struggling to come to terms with that. So we've incorporated self-medication to...
As part of a coping strategy there.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
And I think that's the thing, you know, I've spoken to many people about their coming out experiences, and they've often talking about the fact, there's a great new word for us, spoken about the fact that, you know, when they came out, there was a lot of shame, a lot of self-loathing, a lot of angst. And to deal with that, they kind of got lost on the dance floor listening to Kylie and having a few drinks and celebrating in that way, almost that flip side that you're talking about there. You and I are of a similar age, and I think we grew
We've
up...
We've known each other for at least 25 years.
Yeah, back in Three Faces days. And we both grew up, I think, with that very lasting memory of the Grim Reaper ads that were there. How do you think advertising like that impacted the mental health of us at that young, fragile age?
Well, what it did was scare the shit out of us.
Absolutely.
And we also saw people, you know, coming to the clubs that were fine 1 minute and, you know, you wouldn't see them for 3 months or so. And the next time you saw them, you were like, oh, my God.
What the hell happened?
Yeah. And then the next time, it was their funeral.
Yes.
So we were very acutely aware of the devastating nature of AIDS and you know, the fear of God was put into us from before we were even sexual. You know, the Grim Reaper ad was kind of that.
It was horrifying.
Indoctrination,
At such an early age to experience that kind of ad, it's stuck in our memories all this time.
And from a young gay male's perspective, I mean, it's tantamount to some sort of torture, I reckon, that sort of methodology.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like what it must be, I guess, being a mother of a someone killed in a car accident. You see those TAC ads all the time, and that horrific nature of that being thrust in your face every Sunday night watching 60 Minutes. So that's got to leave some sort of real scarring mental damage. And the way we respond to that is twofold. We either take it on board and act in a self-protection methodology that is highly stigmatizing of others,
yep,
and apparently theoretically protecting of ourselves,
mm-hmm,
or we throw caution to the wind and go off with gay abandon.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Nowadays, of course, a lot of the younger generation have come into the community when HIV is no longer a death sentence. How do you think that kind of reduction of, for want of a better word, penalty or something along those, I don't know what the right word is there, but how do you think that's impacted on how people view HIV now?
It's really interesting because, you know, I've been connected to the subject matter for so many years, and to watch the evolution of this is quite fascinating. I think young people today are, beautifully naive in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. However, many are much better educated in the current state of play,
yep,
than people our own age. They know what treatment as prevention means. They know the benefits of PrEP.
Mm.
People your age and my age won't go on PrEP, and treatment as prevention means nothing to them.
Mm.
Means absolutely nothing to them. And yet, if you say to them, you are more likely to catch HIV from a negative person than you are from a positive person, that is unfathomable to them.
Yeah.
Because they don't get it.
Yeah. Why do you think people our age, and for the listeners who don't know, we're kind of...
Mid-40s.
Yeah. We're not old, we're not young. but why do you think it is that people our age have this absolute resistance to PrEP? Because I've experienced it too. I talk about PrEP and I'm an advocate for PrEP. And yet I find that there is such a stigma attached to that now.
Yeah, I don't think we've experienced the slut-shaming style of stigma that took place in the US. But I do think we suffer from a hangover of AZT, mm-hmm, the first line of antiretroviral treatments that were very hit and miss, huge amount of side effects, killed many people, saved a few. And that sort of horrendous sort of community response to first-line treatments is what we are suffering a hangover from,
mm-hmm,
people our age. Young people have got none of that.
Yeah.
And none of the stigma, none of the drama, none of the Grim Reaper. They get it and they get on with it.
Yeah.
And I love that, you know. It's a new paradigm. It's the older people like you and I who are struggling to come to terms with anything else,
mm,
than the condom message. And I get that after 30 years of indoctrination.
Well, at one point, basically condoms were safe sex. That was the option. Nowadays, it's one of a few different in a safe sex strategy. But you're right. I think people that are in their 40s tend to have an absolute resistance to anything other than condoms being safe sex.
I mean, you usually get the kickback about STIs and all of,
yep,
that. And yes, there are weird things happening in the sexually transmissible infection realm, like the new understanding that hepatitis C is sexually transferable,
mm,
particularly if you're HIV positive. And, you know, there are also strains of gonorrhea that are becoming untreatable. These things, even locally, the strains of gonorrhea are taking 2 to 3 doses of current first-line treatment, whereas previously one would have knocked it on the head. So, you know, there is an evolution going on in that space.
Mm.
It's not exclusive to gay men.
Yep.
But, you know, at the end of the day, we have a lot more sex than what others do. And so, therefore, we are more likely to be in that realm.
Yeah.
And it is affecting our community.
For someone who is freshly diagnosed, do you believe that there are adequate resources out there to support them on all the levels that they need to be supported?
There are. It's a case of whether they have had all of the dots connected. I find it really hard to believe that after 30 years of diagnoses that, you know, we don't have a kit that doctors are given with alongside the results that takes them through a point-by-point how to tell someone that they're positive and what they then need to do. I've had horrendous cases of people, you know, turning up to get the results and doctors saying, you know, clear on gonorrhea, clear on chlamydia, you're HIV positive, see you later. That's it.
Right.
I've had doctors unable to give the results and then send the results to Melbourne Sexual Health and tell the patient to go to Melbourne Sexual Health to get the results.
That would be kind of telling in itself, wouldn't
it? Exactly. I mean, really.
Yeah.
Rapid testing is playing a huge part, but it took us 10 years to get rapid testing. Mm. That is inexcusable and reprehensible as far as our governments are concerned. Same thing with PrEP, same thing with home testing. You know, we have one of, if not the best, health systems in the world, and we are left to, you know, cope with second-rate shit regarding HIV in all realms time and time and time again. And that's because it only affects gay men in this country. And that's not true.
Mm.
The largest growth sector in new HIV diagnoses is actually the heterosexual community in this country. You know, it used to be, you know, back in our day, 95% of new diagnoses were gay men.
Mm.
That's down to 70%. And it will continue to fall dramatically over the next 5 years, I can assure you.
It's interesting that you say that that heterosexuals are kind of overriding.
Not in numbers, but in the growth percentage rate, heterosexual diagnoses are exponentially increasing compared to gay men, which are starting to come down, and that will continue to do so as PrEP kicks in, as treatment as prevention becomes more rolled out. I mean, 90% of diagnosed positive people in the state of Victoria are on treatment, and most of them are undetectable. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah.
If we can sustain that, you know, when we got the understanding of what PrEP did, and we already knew what treatment as prevention was doing, but we just weren't communicating it and still aren't communicating it. When PrEP got through to us all, its effectiveness, technically, we could stop new diagnosis of HIV in this country within a month.
Mm. There's been, in the last few days, a report about a third person that has become HIV positive despite being on PrEP. This time, they're saying that it's not been a particularly rare strain. It seems to have been an instance where they can't actually justify or explain what has actually happened. What impact do you think this fresh diagnosis will have on people using PrEP moving forward?
I hope none.
Mm.
Because if you account for the probably billions of sexual acts involving gay male penetration since PrEP came about, and we've had three cases where something's gone awry.
Pretty damn good.
Tell you what, I'll be going with PrEP if I was able to.
But it's interesting that there is that almost fear-mongering that happens within even our own community around this.
We need to know that these cases are out there and they need to be monitored and we need to keep an eye on it. But that should not in any way impact someone's decision to go on it.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. When you consider some of the reasons why people are not going on PrEP, how many of them do you think are reasonable reasons versus how many of them are perhaps mental, not mental issues so much, but psychological reasons?
It's hard to undo 30 years of indoctrination. I get that. It's hard to wrap your head around the science that is new-ish, you know. I mean, but when I say new-ish, PrEP started in the world wanting to stop the transference of HIV from mother to child. That's where we did the guinea pig testing, right? In Africa on women that were pregnant. PrEP, as we know it today, is the evolution of that. Now, that was done 20 years ago, right? So it's been around a while. The science is pretty clear. women can have babies without mm-hmm. transferring it to their children, and gay men can protect themselves by taking a pill.
Yep. Do you ever see a day where perhaps PrEP will move, you know, given we were talking before about the fact that gay men's numbers of HIV is decreased, do you ever see a day where perhaps PrEP will begin to be seen as more of a crossover into the straight world?
It already is for serodiscordant couples and that sort of thing. I think it's still important to inform, educate, and enrol key affected populations in the use of it first and foremost. Mm. But key affected populations makes it sound as if they're sort of isolated in their own little bubble.
Yep.
You know, as we know, there are married men with children who like to cop it up the arse. Mm. So that bursts that bubble pretty quick.
Yeah.
We haven't talked anything about mental health and STIs and
no.
what we're going to talk about. But it's all part of our mental health. I mean,
it is.
We have been very negligent in connecting the effects of HIV and the impact that has on gay men's mental health.
Mm.
Whether you're positive or negative, the mental health of those living with HIV and how that then plays out with the people they sleep with.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Why it's taken us so long to join those dots is beyond my understanding. And yet we have world best organisations that are well funded to, particularly by a certain shaving campaign in November, that specialise in men's mental health. And yet the work they've been doing in HIV has only just started to begin.
Mm. You mentioned before about some of the instances you've heard where people have been diagnosed and have been told about that via possibly the most insensitive ways possible.
Horrendous.
Do you think those people that have been diagnosed consider their mental health after that? Do you think that they sit back going, that's actually really shaken me, I need to seek some help around this? Or do you think they just kind of, for want of a better term, suck it up and keep going?
Well, if you are diagnosed at one of our good clinics here, and we're so lucky here in Melbourne, if you go to one of those clinics, you will be informed of all of the services that are available to you, and you will be basically hand-led into counselling services, etc.
Mm.
If you go to your average corner GP and you get a positive diagnosis, I don't know what you get.
What happens there?
Right?
Yeah.
But what I can tell you is the best thing you can do if you are newly diagnosed is access a specialist GP, get counselling, and it's free. In fact, you don't even have to be positive to get that counselling. You just have to be gay.
Yeah.
And it's free. And that is the best way forward. If you access a specialist GP and you get that free counselling from Victorian AIDS Council, you are halfway there. The missing point, apart from treatment, which is very relevant, and your GP will take care of that, is connecting yourself to community. And by that I mean involving yourself in something like a newly diagnosed course. In Victoria, it's called Genesis. In New South Wales, it's called Phoenix. But it takes newly diagnosed people, who, by the way, are all ages, from all backgrounds, and it informs them of the best way to look after themselves going forward. And it's fantastic. You know, it's a couple of days on a weekend. You knock it on the head and you will be amazed at the opportunities that lay before you. In fact, you'll be amazed at what little impact HIV can have on your life. yes, it's a chronic disease that you have to manage for the rest of your life. But so's asthma, mm-hmm. and I've got that. So's diabetes, and plenty of people have got that.
Yep.
You know, it's not like cancer where you could be here one day and gone the next. You know, we're pretty lucky.
How much of a stigma do you think is still attached to being HIV positive now?
Shitloads.
Yep.
But that will continue to decrease the more we get our heads around treatment as prevention and PrEP and all of that. But I think the stigma, in many cases, the most damaging stigma comes from within, you know, the internalized stigma of working out where you fit in to the picture. And the best way forward is the community aspect of that, you know, getting to know other people who are in the same boat. And at least, you know, and there's a couple of amazing groups like the Institute of Many, Tim, and also HIVSTERS here in Victoria, mm-hmm. where people can reach out to others, you know, same age, same background, you know, probably people you already know who can hold your hand when you need it, yeah. you know, and that's important.
So in terms of the services that exist out there for people that are HIV positive, where can people turn to? What can they expect from them?
Living Positive Victoria is an amazing resource for positive people, and it is set up to advocate for those who are positive, regardless of where they're at, straight, gay, men and women. We have the Victorian AIDS Council that provides the centre clinic, is a health service, and the Positive Living Centre, which is challenging in a lot of ways for me because it serves a tremendous purpose for our most vulnerable and for many who have been living with HIV for many, many years. And it does that tremendously. However, it upsets me that we take newly diagnosed young people, particularly from the Alfred to the Positive Living Centre, and they walk through those doors and they're faced with images that you and I were faced with back in the 90s. Now, for a 22-year-old kid to walk through those doors and see that is gut-wrenching, and I have had too many cases of where they have turned on their heels and disappeared for the next 2 to 5 years and written themselves off.
Wow.
And that is inexcusable, and it's a poor reflection on the services not being up to date with where they need to be.
Just thinking even just the fact that they're walking in and seeing that kind of image, and we're talking about mental health here.
You got it.
The impact that that image has in that one instant would be so disempowering, so disheartening.
And yet we think we're doing the right thing by taking them to this facility that is set up for people who are positive. My belief is, and this is my wish, that when Victoria gets its whiz-bang new Pride Centre and VAC has 12 floors, that one of those will be the wellness centre.
Right? Great idea.
That will be a little bit like Olivia Newton-John's cancer wellness thing for positive people. And it'll have a gym and it'll have a spa and it'll probably, you know, be a beat and all of that, and that's fine. and it'll incorporate yoga classes and all of the other things and much, much more in an environment that we want to go to, not that we're scared to go to. That's my wish.
I think it's a great wish, great idea, because I can imagine for... We are talking again about that, those visions, those images that...
I want float tanks.
Yep.
Yep. Because, you know, for my mental health, I love float tanks.
Yep.
But, you know, yoga classes and all that.
I think even the fact you're calling it mental wellness as well, as opposed to mental health, because I think mental health has this connotation of being unwell, whereas mental wellness is really about maintaining that.
And I think there's an opportunity for us as a community and for VAC as an organisation to really... renew itself into I guess, world's best.
Yeah.
Why not? Why not aim for that? For me, I have good days and bad. We all do. Mm. I'm fortunate to be passionate about the work that I do. Community is a great distraction. It can drive you up the wall occasionally, and it doesn't pay very well. In fact, it doesn't at all. And so that's difficult and provides its own layer of stress and concern and worry for me personally. But what drives me is the fact that the work I do, I think, is valuable and is valued and has value and is the work that I don't see many others doing. And so I continue to do it for that reason.
Do you think that there are less people doing it because they find it equally hard and challenging to be able to support the community
people,
that way?
There are more people doing it now than when I started, which is great. I love that. And if I can and have played a part in inspiring them to do that, then there could be no greater reward. But I think we are too quick to just accept what's given to us and not make sure that it's the best it could be, question whether it's the right thing for us.
Yep.
You know, these are a standard issue stuff that I think we need to, as journalists in the queer media, we need to do more of. We're very good at reading press releases and promoting and marketing stuff, and that's great. But actually saying, is that really what we need? Or
questioning it and being a little bit Socratic with it.
Thanks for that, but where's the that and that and that? And are you planning for that? Those sorts of things are where we aren't very good at and we should do more of.
Why do you think we accept it so willingly?
Well, I think we've been on the shit list for so long as gay people that we accept anything that comes our way, you know. Anything that's bright and shiny and glossy, we should be thankful for. Mm. Well, yeah, but if it's crumbs and it's not what it should be, well, why isn't it what it should be?
Yeah.
In the HIV space, you know, we set up what is still considered world's best practice. The response for HIV was for community, by community. And government agreed early on that they will happily just pay for it. And all we need to do is for community, by community. Community, you run it, send your acquittal, we'll give you some more money, job done. And that works, but who's policing that? Who's questioning that? In the early days, we had engaged board members of organisations that were, you know, walking down the streets with placards fighting for acknowledgement and for funds and for the cause. And we had people fighting to be alive. They were really engaged and really connected to the issue. Well, we were as a community. Fairfield House is a response to community engagement when Fairfield Hospital closed and there was uproar. Now, we've gone through, you know, a period where community just went sort of silent. We didn't have those conversations about what we were getting. We just took what we were given. We were told what to do. And we just accepted that. You know, I think things have changed. You know, in the last 5 years, I've seen a dramatic change in the level of engagement of the sector to community. And that is fantastic. And the results speak for themselves. So you look at the community response that PrEP got, led by community, that was enabled by an HIV org. Amazing. Mm. Amazing. Amazing.
How much do you think has the community changed over the recent years? Because I think for a lot of people, they tend to view the community as being almost that nightclub scene, which is kind of limiting in itself. And the fact is that that's diminishing and almost disappearing.
You know, when people criticize the scene, I say the scene is four walls, a bar and a drag queen.
Yep.
Whatever else you make of it, you're inventing for yourself.
Mm.
You know, that's the scene.
Yes.
So you can criticize it or do whatever you like, but it's four walls, a bar and a drag queen.
Mm.
That's the scene. Go nuts. Tell me how horrible it is.
It is interesting, though, because for I think a lot of people that again, it's a lot of people back our age, back in our, as I pull out my Zimmer frame. But I think for a lot of people our age, when we first came out, the scene was an important part of building our identity
and
discovering who we were. And
we were there four nights a week, Lawrence. I remember. I
know, and discovering you know, our community, I go to use that word.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, I think, vital as part of us finding out who we were. Nowadays, it doesn't seem to be as relevant.
Or connected.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of younger gay guys coming out nowadays are more integrated into mainstream society. They don't go out to pick up because they have apps for it nowadays.
They also have less hang-ups in a lot of ways too. I mean, I don't see the internalized homophobia in our young people that may not even identify as homosexual.
Mm.
You know, they because sex and gender is kind of irrelevant
exactly.
to many.
Yeah.
Which I think is amazing.
It's brilliant that we've got to this stage. Yeah.
You know, I struggle with it because, you know, I fought so hard and for so long to own my sexuality. How dare you take it away from me? But I love that you know, that it's not even an issue.
Nowadays, fluidity seems to be the very much the in thing.
Yeah. Or just whatever, man. Yeah. You know. And that's great.
Mm.
I worry that we don't have the connection as a broader community that we once did in the sense that you know, those dance parties were amazing.
Yeah.
But we do come out. I mean, you only have to look at Carnival Day, right?
Yes.
That's
fantastic.
Beautiful, right? Mm. But we probably need more than one a year of something like that.
I think in the way that the opportunities for our community to connect and celebrate are diminishing. And I think that's a shame because I think that those moments help us to really embrace some of the positive things about being gay or lesbian or trans or bi or, you know, whatever identity you choose to acknowledge as yourself.
And that feeds nicely into the mental health and well-being of community.
Correct.
I mean, if you get that right, hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, halfway there, aren't you?
Exactly. If we realise that there's more out there to our world, more out there in our community, then it makes it easier to feel that there's that support and acceptance there.
Mm. I agree.
Dean, thank you so much for your time today.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Can I give my podcast series a plug?
Absolutely. You have tens of thousands more listeners than I do, but sure.
Well, you can, of course, check out Hide and Seek at Joy, or you can check out Word for Word, my other show at Joy. But the podcast series is insidehiv.net, and it's the podcast for positive people.
And we can place links for that on the Release Hypnosis website, as well as in the details underneath this podcast if you're watching on YouTube.
Thank you very much. It's been great to be with you.
And we'll speak to everyone next time.
Bye.